Think of a profound question about our world. What allows humankind to fight off diseases and survive on this planet? Or how closely do our perceptions match physical reality? Now, suppose you asked science to answer those questions. What you end up with, it seems, is a bunch of scientists looking very carefully at drag queen garter snakes, fish called sticklebacks, and human volunteers glancing at clocks on the wall. Joining me to talk about all this is NPR science correspondent Dan Charles. So, I really find it hard to believe that there's such thing as drag queen garter snakes.
These are male garter snakes. They don't look like female garter snakes, but they smell like female garter snakes. They only do this for the first day or two after they come out of hibernation. This was studied up in Manitoba in Canada, where it's very cold. So they're hibernating for 8 months of the year. They come out in the spring. The male garter snakes smell like females, and what happens is dozens, even hundreds, of male garter snakes kind of pile on top of them. Lustful male garter snakes kind of pile on top of them. And then after a day or two, the female smell goes away.
And so what's the point of this?
Yeah, what is the point of this? There was some speculation that it was this cruel trick being played on the other male garter snakes just to confuse and distract them while the feminine-smelling male garter snake went off and mated with the real females. But it turns out it's a survival strategy. If all those males pile on top of that male garter snake who smells like a female, the crows flying overhead can't come down and attack that garter snake. Also, it helps them get warm. When they're just coming out of hibernation, they're very stiff and cold. Warming up allows them to start moving again.
But what I don't understand is why they're protecting that one garter snake from the crows only at that moment. You mean crows don't want to attack the snakes at any other time of year?
It's when the garter snake is most vulnerable. When it comes out of hibernation, it's very stiff. It can't move very well, and that's when they're most vulnerable to attack by crows.
So who's the lucky garter snake on the bottom? How does he get chosen?
Well, I guess they all try this strategy for when they first come out of hibernation, and I guess the ones on top are kind of the sacrificial victims of this survival strategy.
So what does this teach us? Anything?
Not clear, but by studying survival strategies of creatures in nature, I guess the theory is you develop clues for survival strategies of all of life. There are some examples where the parallels to human experience are more clear, which brings us to the stickleback.
Yeah, what is it?
The stickleback is a fish, and I don't know much more about it except that they studied it in these big, huge tanks in an institute in Germany. All of these papers, I should say, were published in the journal Nature this week. The stickleback apparently can smell. I didn't know this, but apparently...
Meaning it has the power to smell things, not that it stinks.
Right. And one of the things that it can smell in other sticklebacks is the presence of particular genes that are part of a fish's immune system.
And the point of this is?
Well, again, it's a survival strategy. If the fish has a lot of those genes, it's good. It allows the fish to fight off diseases more effectively. And so what happened in the stickleback case is female fish were more likely to mate with male fish that had a great diversity of these genes, and they apparently knew that through the sense of smell.
Okay, so scientists are studying all these other species to get some clues about humankind. Are they studying humans?
Well, some things it requires a human, like humans can tell you their perception of what they are seeing. So, which leads us to an experiment where they asked people to look at a clock on the wall. Now, some of us may have had this experience. You look at a clock on the wall, and the second hand seems to be kind of frozen for an extra fraction of a second. It's as though it weren't moving for a little bit longer than it should be, and then it moves on regularly. And what they discovered is they asked people to look at a clock on the wall. They were able to manipulate the amount of time the second hand would stay in place, and they discovered that people thought the second hand was fixed in space for the amount of time it took for the eye to travel to the clock. It was as though when the eye got to the clock, it saw the second hand, let's say, at the 2, and the brain said, oh, it must have been right there also during the time that the eye took to get to that spot. It's like it was taking a perception and filling it in time, into a blank space in our mind.
Well, they've observed this, but can they figure out why the mind does this?
No, they have no idea why the mind does this, except they have a theory that says the mind doesn't like things that are too abrupt. The mind likes to smooth out our perception of reality. I like to think of it as you wake up in the morning and the world is a tragic place, and you feel really sad, and you think, it must always have been sad, and it's always going to be sad. Or you wake up in the morning and you feel happy, and you think the world is a great place, and it always will be.
NPR science correspondent Dan Charles. Thanks, Dan.
Nice to be here.